From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. Do you break into sweats, worried you'll be stuck at your cubicle well into your golden years? The workforce is aging. Some employers embrace it. The AARP just came out with its list of top 50 employers for workers over 50. Well, others don't embrace it. And while older workers try to find their way, this hour On Point, what happens when workers hang on? You can join our conversation. Are you working well into your golden years because you have to, because you want to? Are you worried you'll never be able to retire? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Later in the hour, we'll look at the hot cities for younger workers. But first, joining me now from Washington is Deborah Russell, Director of Workforce Issues at the AARP, America's largest organization that addresses workplace issues for people over 50. She is behind the AARP's list of top employers for people over 50. Deborah, nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And with us in studio is Alicia Monell, Director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. She is Professor of Management Sciences at Boston College's Carroll School of Management. And she's working on a book titled Working Longer, The Answer to the Retirement Income Challenge. Alicia, welcome to you.
Delighted to be here, Jane.
Deborah, let's start with you. Tell me about this list of top employers for people over 50. What were you looking for?
Yes, this is our seventh year of honoring companies that have good policies and practices for 50-plus workers. And basically, we're looking at the following criteria. We want to look at how companies are recruiting this demographic. Are they doing anything beyond sort of the traditional ways of outreach? We look at the issue of flexible work arrangements. What kinds of flexible opportunities do individuals have with their companies? We look at ongoing training and development opportunities. We look at benefits, both health and pension and other kinds of benefits. And then finally, how do they utilize their retired workers? Are they able to come back into the workplace and work on a temporary basis?
And give us an idea of who's at the top of your list.
This year, SC Johnson made the top of our list. They're a family-owned business, household names such as Pledge and other household products, and basically made the list for a variety of different reasons, including ways that they accommodate their mature workforce, ongoing training opportunities that they offer, all kinds of different flexible arrangements. They have long-tenured employees there who talk about how flexible work arrangements have allowed them to balance both work and family.
It used to be, Deborah, that workers left their jobs when they reached retirement age. You know, at 65, you get the nice gold watch and you're ready to go enjoy yourself at retirement. Not so anymore, right? What is the trend as the AARP tracks it?
Well, our research shows that as we query boomers, those that we surveyed, clearly 70% indicate that they plan on working past traditional retirement age. And when we asked them what the top two reasons were, money and health insurance came up as the top two reasons. Mm-hmm. So clearly there's an economic issue going on with boomers who are just simply not prepared to finance their retirement, particularly when you think about the fact that we're living longer. And at, 65, you could potentially enjoy a retirement of as much as 30 years. Many people are not financially equipped to do that.
Mm. Alicia, you working on a book, you study these trends. Is that what you see, that there are real financial reasons that our older workers are staying in the office?
I think the financial drivers are really important. Basically, things are going to get worse in the future than they are today. Social Security is going to replace less of earnings. More people are going to have to depend on 401k plans, and those 401k plans have very modest balances. People don't save anything outside their retirement plans, and healthcare costs are soaring. So people have a big incentive to wait till at least 65 before they retire.
So from your work, from your study, who makes a better worker, generally speaking? Older workers, younger workers? How would you judge?
It's a trade-off because older workers are more reliable. They know the ropes. They know how to do the job. On the other hand, they don't learn new things as easily. People are unsure about how long they're going to be with them. And so it's a trade-off. But older workers do tend to be more expensive, which makes this a conundrum.
Because?
salaries rise with age, health care costs rise with age, and whether you have these old-fashioned defined benefit plans, their costs rise with age. So you have sort of a mixed bag on the part of the employee, and then definitely the higher costs. Mm.
Deborah Russell, I read a recent study that showed that the average job hunt for a worker over 55 took nearly 7 weeks longer than it did for a younger worker. Generally speaking, why is that?
Yeah, our studies have shown, it's roughly somewhere around 4 to 7 weeks. And it's a variety of reasons. One, maybe you have somebody who's been, you know, in the same job for many years and has not brushed up on, you know, sort of the new style of resumes, the new way that employers are interviewing, and even the whole online experience with, you know, posting your job online or posting your resume online mm-hmm. is new. Mm-hmm. So I think part of it is just the new processes that you know, take a while for someone who's been sort of out of the race of having to look for a job. Mm-hmm. But secondly, you know, we can't ignore the issue of discrimination. And certainly as we talk to members, our members and job seekers and studies that we've done, they indicate that, you know, they get a sense that, you know, there might be a hesitancy on the part of particularly a younger interviewer, you know, to hire a mature worker for many of the reasons that Alicia pointed out.
Well, from your perspective, what are the stereotypes that are attached to older workers?
Well, our studies have shown that on the one hand, employers talk about the fact that, you know, older workers are reliable, they're dependable, they come to work on time, they finish a task, they're willing to stay late, you know, they're invested in the overall success of the company. However, the negative perception still exists of, you know, not willing to try new things, perhaps don't have up-to-date skills, particularly as it relates to technology, perhaps not willing to report to a younger boss, and then the issue of expense. You know, but the reality is that a lot of those are perceptions, and though you may find older workers that have those attributes, you will find many of them that don't. Mm. And I think we have to be, you know, careful, you know, when we sort of broad brush these sort of cohorts of workers, because you can have those same attributes in a younger worker who may not, you know, want to try something new, who may not be willing to answer to an older, you know, mm-hmm, boss. So mm-hmm. I think we have to balance that out.
Alicia, pick up on that a little bit and talk about the dynamic in the workplace where an older worker answers to a younger boss and what that means.
Well, I mean, I think it's really interesting because if you take surveys, people say they want to work for a very long time. And yet, if you look at the average retirement age at 63, and something happens, and often it is a new young boss coming in mm. and thinking, I'm not going to put up with this, I'm out of here. So it does have an edge to it that encourages people to leave. But I agree with Deborah, it's so important for people to think about working longer. And it is going to be very hard because the dynamics of the labor market have changed. In the old days, if you looked at somebody who was 60 years old, that person was most likely the same employer he was with when he was 50. Today, less than half are. So you've got all these people in their 50s out in the labor market trying to find jobs, and it's really hard.
And what do all those workers want? What kind of employment do older workers seek? What are they looking for? And is that different from what a younger worker might want?
Well, actually, what we found, interestingly enough, is there are a lot of similarities to what older workers want compared to what younger workers want. And the big one is flexibility, just wanting to do work in a different way. For a younger worker, it may be they need the flexibility because they have children. They need to be able to, you know, spend time or, you know, be able to leave the work, their office in case there are, you know, issues, a child gets sick, that sort of thing. Well, for an older worker, you know, we found that boomers, a growing number of them are part of the sandwich generation where they have children that they're still responsible for, but they also have aging parents. And so wanting that flexibility from that perspective. And then flexibility for other reasons, such as, you know, really wanting to maybe downgrade some of the responsibility that they've had over the years and really looking for less responsibility. So mm-hmm. we're finding, for instance, more companies that are offering things like phased retirement, which, you know, really allows somebody to reduce their hours of work.
So, Deborah, based on everything that we've heard here so far, if someone is working into their later years, is it your advice to stay where you are, to stick to what you've got, even if it's not ideal, simply because it may be more challenging on the outside?
Well, I mean, certainly it's going to be challenging on the outside, but, my experience has been that most people at this age are not looking to just stick it out in the same job, particularly if it's a job they didn't like in the first place, that boomers are really looking for the opportunity to transition into new opportunities where they can maybe use some of the skills that they currently have, or looking to, go back and take some additional training so that they have new experiences and opportunities in areas where they have interest or where they feel like they can give back. So I think it's a mixed bag.
Alicia, is that your sense?
My bottom line is that people are retiring at 63 today. They're going to have to retire at 66. It's really scary to leave your job and go out there and try to find something else. Most of the jobs that you find will pay less and have less benefits. It also might have less stress, so it might be the right thing to do, but it's a risky deal to give up a bird in the hand.
Alicia Monell, Director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College, and Deborah Russell, Director of Workforce Issues at the AARP. With us this hour, we're talking about the workforce getting older and what that means. You can join the conversation. Are you or someone you know looking for work and finding that employers just don't want someone over 50? Are you young, overworked, and worried you'll still be pulling in late nights well into your 50s, 60s, and 70s? Let us know about it. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. Much more to come on this. We'll be right back. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about an aging workforce and how companies are responding. You can join our conversation when you look around your office. How many people are over 50? Are you one of them? Employers, what's your experience with older workers? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Later in this hour, we'll look at what city's top Forbes list of top 10 cities for young professionals. But first, we're talking with Deborah Russell, Director of Workforce Issues at the AARP, America's largest organization that addresses workplace issues for people over 50, and with Alicia Monell, Director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. I want to go right to the phones. Lots of callers lined up here. The first is Diane from Providence, Rhode Island. Diane, you're on the line. Hello.
Hi there. I'm a boomer, leading edge boomer age-wise, and for 25 years I worked in large corporations in marketing, strategic planning, and business development, and I've been outplaced twice.
Mm-hmm.
Both times I found myself in the company of many other similarly aged people between 55 and 60 looking for work at a middle and upper management level, and most of us have become frustrated, and most of them were male. I was one of two females both times in a group of about 25 people. And found that most of the guys eventually gave up. They took their pensions such as they were, and they were early retirement, so the pensions weren't great, and left the workforce. I reinvented myself and found that the nonprofit sector was a little more open to hiring people with in their 50s, and that was my route. But what I would like to ask your experts is, what do they suggest for middle and upper level managers who don't want to go work at Kmart or Walmart, who don't want to work at Starbucks, who aren't looking for the flexibility as much as they are for the challenge? It's not about have to work. It's about want to work, and want to have the same level of responsibility that we've had for the last however many years, and not being able to find those opportunities.
Diane, thank you. I'll turn that to Deborah Russell. Here's a leading-edge boomer. She calls herself outplaced twice, looking for work because she wants to work. What's your advice for her, Deborah?
Yes, Diane, I know it's a real challenge, and we hear that quite often about the You know, the boomer who's looking for the challenge. They don't want to work at Walmart. They don't want to work at McDonald's. And that's completely understandable. AARP actually has a program that's trying to address some of that. It's called our National Employer Team, which right now is made up of 30 national employers that represent retail, banking, manufacturing, trucking, in an effort to reach out to employers and identify those employers who actually do recognize the value of 50-plus workers and connect them with job seekers who are out there looking for jobs. That way, you know, through that process, we're both able to vet those companies to ensure that they are, in fact, an age-friendly workplace, if you will, and also to, you know, let our members and older job seekers know that there are companies out there.
Well, what kind of positions are those companies recruiting for if they're actively recruiting?
Anything from, you know, management and banking to we have a partnership with Home Depot where they're looking for people who have expertise in electrical work and plumbing. We have partnered with a couple of universities. So it really is a variety of jobs, not just low-end jobs. We wanted to be sure that these are not companies who are just simply looking for, you know, people who can greet at the front door or run a cash register.
All right, thank you. Back to the phones now in Lake Placid, New York, is where Jack is. Jack, you're on the line. Hello.
Hi. Well, I realize that the private sector is in a position where they can cash out of their defined benefit plans for the retirement contracts with their employees. That happened to me, and I basically got less than 2 years worth of what they said I would have gotten if I started working at age, you know, would have just left working that day and started collecting at 62. So, you know, there's only there's a big disparity between the private sector and the public municipal employment sector. Those pension plans are very lucrative.
Jack, thank you. I'm going to turn this to Alicia. Is this a common issue?
It's a really serious problem in the sense that a lot of companies are shutting down their defined benefit plans, and people who are in their 40s and 50s are going to get a lot less than they would have otherwise. And so it's an inevitable trend in the private sector. In the public sector, the caller is correct. There still are defined benefit plans there. The employees contribute substantially to them. But the trend away from defined benefit plans makes life more treacherous for workers as they age.
And I guess this is just about money for the company.
Yeah.
Bottom line.
No, bottom line.
Let's bring in now from Racine, Wisconsin, Gail Kosterman. She's the Executive Vice President of Worldwide Human Resources at SC Johnson, named by the AARP as the number one employer this year for workers over 50. The company has $7.5 billion in sales, employs 12,000 workers, and is a leading manufacturer of household cleaning products, including Edge, Windex, Pledge, and Glade. Nice to have you with us, Gail. Thanks.
Well, thank you. Nice to see you.
So you've been named by the AARP as the number one employer for workers over 50. What makes you number one?
Well, we are absolutely delighted to be named as the number one employer. Our vision is to strive to have the best people of all backgrounds doing their best work, supported by a culture of inclusion and fairness. And we do that because it helps us strive for innovation, quality, and results.
How do you strive to innovate with an older worker?
Well, we treat everyone with respect, integrity, fairness, and that enables them to do great work and feel good about the place that they're going to work every day.
What percentage of your workforce is over 50, Gail?
We have 35% of our workforce who is 50 years or older, and the percent over 50 is 28%.
So describe your benefits package from health care to on-site medical center. I know you've got a lot going on there, but sort of encapsulate it for us and tell us why older workers love it there.
Well, we have numerous benefits. You were just talking about defined contribution plans, and we have a defined contribution plan that actually helps everyone earn earn money toward retirement. We have a 401k where we match 50% of contributions up to 6% of pay. We have retiree health care. We have paid sabbatical leaves, and I've heard from people that they've taken those to be with their grandchildren and just really enjoy the time away. We have flexible work hours. We have part-time job sharing. No meeting days. That's kind of an unusual one. That's every other Friday. It gives everyone an opportunity to not have a meeting and therefore have a little think time and just numerous other programs.
So from your perspective, Gail, is there any downside to older workers? Do you find they need tutorials on technology, or maybe they demand higher salaries to reflect their years of experience? And, you know, what about the fact that they might more readily utilize health care coverage? What is the downside, if any?
Oh, we don't see any downside whatsoever. These are people who are mature workers. They have experience. They have skills. It helps the company not have to retrain people, not have to go through the expense of recruiting. Our turnover is about 2% a year. And, you know, our active mature employees have just seen it all. They know what to do.
Do you consider this a model for other companies? Are you out there trying to sell this?
Well, I do think it's a model, but I'm not out there trying to sell it because, I think it's a competitive advantage.
Interesting. A competitive advantage, Alicia.
It definitely is a model, and certainly Gail deserves congratulations, but it just is a minority in terms of the companies out there. We've done a number of surveys of employers, and generally they do have this characterization of older workers as not able to learn new tasks, and they worry about their health and stamina. And they also don't know how long they're going to be there, so they don't know how much to invest in them. And as I said before, older workers generally do cost more, and basically our bottom line from our surveys is that employers were really lukewarm about retaining or hiring, much less old workers. So SC Johnson sounds like a model, and I wish there were more models like that out there.
Gail Kosterman, we talked earlier about this dynamic in many companies today with the older workforce growing, of the older employer answering to a younger boss. How do you deal with that at SC Johnson, and is that an issue?
It's not an issue for us. We do ongoing employee surveys, and we ask a lot of questions about how people feel about their work environment, their managers, and we strive for a very inclusive environment, one that allows everyone to have a full amount of engagement and accountability.
Well, Gail Kosterman, I appreciate your time and your explanation of why SC Johnson is so interested in the older worker, named number one by AARP as far as workers over 50 and what they do to help them. Thanks so much, Gail. Appreciate your time.
Well, thank you, and we are absolutely delighted.
Thanks. Let's go back to the phones now, get some more perspective from our listeners. From Spokane, Washington, Jack is calling. Hi, Jack. You're on the line. Go ahead.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Based on your previous conversations, I'm going to reverse the order of my comments. I'm 62, have chosen to retire. Unfortunately, been in reasonably good health and able to keep up with the younger employees, but the job required substantial travel, and after many years of that, I decided that I just wanted to be home more than I wanted to continue the job. The thing that I'm noticing with younger workers coming on is the companies may be underestimating as they cut benefits, do away with defined pension plans, that sort of thing, that the result of that is the younger, newer employees feel no particular loyalty to that sort of plan. And I'm seeing that there is a reluctance to make the investment of time and energy with the expectation that there may be rewards down the road. Younger employees say, I don't see any of that. I want it now.
Interesting.
And so that may be a result of companies' actions.
Jack, thank you. Deborah Russell, I turn that to you. Is that an issue? Have you, as you've seen it among your members?
Well, it's interesting when we were talking about the issue of cost. AARP did conduct a study that looked at the cost of older workers. We commissioned a company by the name of Towers Perrin to really see whether there was a business case for utilizing 50-plus workers to address in certain industries where there is going to be either current or future labor shortages. And what we found is one area that's not very well studied when it comes to the issue of cost, two areas actually, is the cost of engagement and the cost of turnover. And your previous caller is absolutely right in terms of, you know, a lot of companies talk about the fact that it takes over 3 years, about 3.5 years, to see a return on their investment on one employee. And you take the healthcare field where some are spending upwards of $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 to recruit and to train one nurse. Yeah. If that nurse doesn't stay and you're having to repeat this, you know, over and over again, the cost of turnover can almost be you know, more than the salary of the individual. Mm. Our study showed that older workers tend to stay 3.3 times longer with a company than a younger worker. Now, you know, clearly younger workers are just starting out. You know, they're looking for new and ongoing opportunities. But if you're going to look at the issue of cost, that's got to be something that needs to be put into the mix.
Interesting. I want to squeeze one more call in here before the break, and that will go to Bob from Gratos, Virginia. Hi, Bob. You're on the line. Go ahead.
Yeah, I got kind of a question comment. I'm 52, and I can't get a job at Home Depot or Lowe's. Quickly, I'm more on the working class side of things. I do have a year of college, which really isn't a big deal. I've worked for the postal system. Very youthful, very young looking. I go to all these job fairs and in-house interviews, and I can't get a job at Lowe's or Home Depot in the whole valley. Go with a shirt and tie, got a ready-made nice resume with my picture in the corner on it. I got a tie on. I'm real up. And I can't get a job driving trucks.
And you think you're ready? And you think you your age has something to do with it?
I do, and I'm totally dumbfounded because I'm very young looking. You know, my health's good. I look young. I'm energetic. I got good reference. No criminal background. I'm a CDL driver.
All right, Bob, Alicia.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Bob says he just can't get a job anywhere, and he thinks it's AIDS discrimination.
I mean, Bob's experience is not atypical. It's really hard out there in the labor market for people in their 50s. And increasingly, people are leaving their jobs in the 50s and looking for new jobs, and it takes an extraordinarily long time to match the worker with the new position. I mean, if we talk about things that could be done, states could set up some type of organization that would serve as a clearinghouse for job openings for and matching with people who are in their 50s and 60s looking for positions. But it's really tough.
You often hear Deborah Russell of, you know, age discrimination lawsuits these days. And I wonder how the prevalence of those suits deters companies when it comes to hiring older workers. On the flip side of Bob's question.
Well, I mean, certainly there are companies that talk about the concern that the law is going to work against them if they treat older people differently. Certainly we hear that in the HR community, and that plays a role. But, you know, the reality is that, you know, companies who, you know, older workers are just simply saying, we want a fair shake. You know, we want, you know, to be treated the same as any other worker when it comes to, you know, interviewing for a job. You know, whether I'm in the job and ongoing training, you know, just communicate with me in terms of what are the opportunities, what you'd like me to do, you know, but it is tough. And certainly our research shows that 49 years old is about the age that people begin to perceive discrimination. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to say very quickly to Bob, you know, we have a relationship with a company called Schneider Trucking. And if you go onto our website and look up the National Employer Team, take a look at some of the jobs that are available there, you know, just again as another resource.
All right. We're talking about the aging workforce with Deborah Russell, Director of Workforce Issues at the AARP, and Alicia Monell, Director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. You can join our conversation. What does it mean in the workplace when employees hang on? When just a few years back, they could expect their goodbye party at age 65. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we'll be right back after this break. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about pulling a paycheck into your 60s, even 70s, and what that means in the workplace. You can join the conversation. Does your company value its older workers, or do everything to push them out the door? What kind of work would you like to be doing when you reach your later years? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're speaking with Deborah Russell, Director of Workforce Issues at the AARP, America's largest organization that addresses workplace issues for people over 50, and with Alicia Monell, Director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. Joining me now from Janesville, Wisconsin, is Marilyn Potts, a marketing specialist at Mercy Health System. That's a healthcare network of more than 30 facilities in southern Wisconsin and northern Illinois. Mercy Health System was named the number two employer for workers over 50 this year. She has been with Mercy for 25 years, and she's now 62 years old. She works 20 hours a week and often from home. Marilyn, nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
So what's your history with Mercy Health? Why have you been there so long? What's so good about it?
Well, I started working part-time when my children were still at home, and then they asked me to come and work full-time, and now I'm back to part-time again, now that my husband is retired, and he's home more, and we like to travel and that sort of thing, but I've been able to just kind of make my schedule work for me.
Over the years, you have
right.
switched back and forth many
right,
times
right.
in your career. And now I understand you job share with a young mom.
Yes.
How much do you rely on each other? How much do you watch each other's backs? Is that an important part or a important component of this job?
Well, we help each other out as needed. She has her own workload, and I have my own workload, but we're relatively familiar with each other's workload. So when I often cover for her and she often covers for me, and as a matter of fact, that person is leaving our health system right now and moving back to Maryland, and so I'm able to just jump in and take over quite a bit of her workload.
Do you have friends, Marilyn, or former coworkers that are out there looking for work? Do they look at your situation and think, golly, she's got it good? It's not quite like that everywhere?
Yeah, they do. They do. I hear that a lot. I hear, where can I get a job like that?
Mm-hmm.
But truthfully, it isn't like a gravy job. I mean, I do work part-time, but they know at this department that I can work 20 hours or I can work 35 hours because I don't have to worry about childcare or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I work part-time, but it's a professional job, and it's challenging and rewarding. You know, it's not like, that's part of the reason I'm still here, because I probably mm-hmm. would want to work part-time somewhere just for something, you know, to keep me challenged and have mm-hmm. that reward, and
mm-hmm.
I really find that in this mm-hmm. department, in this marketing department at Mercy Health System.
Mm. So how do you stay marketable as an older worker?
Well, I think, as I just said, it's that, yes, it's great, it's flexible for me, and
mm-hmm.
yes, it's great,
mm-hmm.
it's flexible. I think that's, in my case, that's what it is, you know, part of it. I think I'm valued. I think all the older workers at Mercy feel valued, and we have a lot of experience, and not just work experience, but we have a lot of life experience that we can share with younger workers.
Mm. Well, Marilyn Potts is a marketing specialist at Mercy Health System. She spoke with us today from Janesville, Wisconsin. Great to have you, Marilyn. Thanks so much. Good luck.
Sure. Thank you.
Let's go back to the phones now. I want to get a lot of these callers in. Francie is from Peterborough, New Hampshire. She's on the line. Hi, Francie. Go ahead.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
Yes. Peterborough, New Hampshire is a somewhat rural area, and I was working at a nice company, and which does include people of all ages, and I was got people in the 70s even there. And I need to work another 10 years until I'm 70, but I was very recently let go. And I'm interested, if a person is let go due to age discrimination, what should an older worker do subsequently? Where should they turn, and how to secure the next job?
Francie, let's try to answer your questions. Deborah Russell, do you have some thoughts?
Sure. I mean, there are some recourses you can take if you feel that you've been discriminated against. You can either, you can go to your local Equal Employment Opportunity Office and file a claim, and they will process it from there, taking a look at whether or not your claim is valid. Oftentimes, though, I have to say that it's very difficult, to prove necessarily that you were let go as a result of your age. There's great information on our website that gives you not only how to file, but how much time you have between the time that you were let go and when the time runs out, to file. So take a look at the information, because it will also give you a list of sort of, do you know whether or not you've in fact been discriminated against? Oftentimes we may feel that we have been, but we may not have any proof to really take it any further than that.
All right, Deborah, thank you. I want to go back to the line now. Maureen from Shrewsbury, Massachusetts is calling. Hi, Maureen, go ahead.
Yes, hi. Hello, Jane.
Hi.
Hi, I'm 67 years old, and I actually haven't worked in a full-time position since 9/11. I have a master's degree. I look a lot younger than 67 years old, at least I'm told that I do. I'm in good health, and I would really like to work on a part-time basis, preferably in the travel industry, as that's what I was in for 40-plus years. However, I've had, varied experience in other positions as well, and I would prefer a part-time job, and I just can't secure one. Let me put it back. I can secure a job, but it's like $10 an hour,
$12 an hour. Maureen, thank
you. It's impossible to get a job.
Alicia?
No, this is the same issue. The labor force for older workers is a very tough place to be. The demand for people in their 60s is very low. We did do a study that showed that the anti-discrimination laws tended to work against hiring older workers. Mm-hmm. It protects those on the job, but, boy, it makes the employers reluctant to take on new ones. So it's a very, very difficult situation out there. Mm-hmm. Can I just add one other point,
please,
though? Because there's a lot of emphasis on this flexibility, and flexibility is definitely good. But I think one has to be careful about the thought of moving from full-time employment to part-time employment too early. I mean, our studies indicate that people really are going to be needing to work till full-time, till age 66, and then part-time employment thereafter. But this idea that you start edging in for around your late 50s and early 60s is not going to be a reasonable alternative for most people financially. If you can do it, great. Mm-hmm. But for most people, it's going to be very difficult.
Deborah Russell, I want to give you the last word here about this. What do you see as the future as so many older workers continue in the job market, in the workforce?
I think Alicia raises some very good points. I mean, even if you look at the AARP Best Employers for Workers Over 50 list, we're honoring 50 companies. And over the 7 years, we've seen, some consistency in terms of the companies that are appearing on the list. However, you're talking about a workforce of 78 million right now that are going to have to work longer. All of the research shows that, and certainly the issues that we've talked about today in terms of the rates of savings, the companies moving from defined benefit plans to defined contribution plans, which is much less and requires individuals to make a lot of financial decisions that they're not prepared to make. Is really going to put people in a position where they're going to have no choice but to work longer. And employers are going to have to really pay attention to this. Our list certainly shows that there are companies that are beginning to pay attention to this and not only understand that older workers are a competitive advantage, for instance, in healthcare, where, by the way, one of the winning companies was Massachusetts General Hospital in that local area. But that, you know, at the same time, older workers do bring some value to the workplace.
Right, right. Deborah Russell, I'm going to have to let that be the last word as we end this break. Deborah Russell, Director of Workforce Issues at the AARP. I appreciate your time with us today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Alicia Munnell, Director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. Alicia, thanks to you.
My pleasure.
In a moment, where young professionals should live and work. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're taking a turn now to look at the hottest cities for young professionals who are just starting out. The list factors in where the top graduates go, where the best businesses are based, which cities have the most young people, and of course, how much they get paid. Joining me now from New York is Matt Woolsey, reporter for Forbes.com. Matt, nice to have you with us.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So tell us about your list.
Well, the list that we developed, the first thing we looked at is in terms of where the best companies were. I think when you're talking about young professionals, the main pull for them is in terms of where they're going to work, where the job opportunities are. And so we took the Forbes best 400 big companies and the best 200 small companies, and we laid them out across the country and figured out on a per capita basis where the highest concentrations were. We also developed a pretty broadly based index of top national universities looking at graduates from 10 years ago. 10 years ago, we thought being a good measure of, you know, sorting out your life, getting out of the college town and starting a good career,
mm-hmm.
And figuring out where they were 10 years after the fact, adjusted both to keep in-state people, to compensate for that, and then also adjusted for the size of the city so that smaller cities like Austin or Minneapolis could compete with New York or Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the big problems in terms of tracking this population is that a lot of times demographic data for people in the age group doesn't necessarily reflect young professionals. And so the idea with the colleges that we chose was to look at a kid who could go anywhere that they wanted. I think one of the big things when you're talking about cities that work well for young professionals is in that ability to pick a place to go and where these companies exist. It's this idea of where these opportunities are and where these perceived opportunities are. Pay and cost of living does matter, but when you're talking about cities like New York or San Francisco or Atlanta, which were the top three on our list, and even smaller cities which made the top 10, like Seattle, Minneapolis, and Austin, Texas,
mm-hmm.
There's a sense in which people are willing to take slightly lower pay grade, maybe being willing to take, work a job maybe that they're not, it's at a lower level than they would be able to get at a smaller city, a less prominent city. But there's a sense in which, 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, they're going to be able to be a pretty high up there and be a big fish in a big pond. And I think that's the primary goal in terms of attracting young people to a city, is that sort of 5 and 10 years down the line, where am I going to be? Where am I going to be financially? Where am I going to be professionally?
All right. Give us the list then, and in its totality, Matt.
In its totality. Yeah. There's 40 cities on the list.
And the top 10.
The top 10. New York, San Francisco, Atlanta, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., Boston, Seattle, Minneapolis, and Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And I can give you the bottom 10 if you
mm-hmm.
like as well. The bottom 10 is sometimes a little bit more interesting because that's where all the email that comes into my box comes from.
All right.
So we've got Tampa, Detroit, Indianapolis, Kansas City, Orlando, San Antonio, Norfolk, Las Vegas, Miami, and Greensboro, North Carolina. And I think one of the things to think about in terms of the bottom 10 that makes it more interesting is I think you were just talking about older workers and older people and sort of the baby boomers and where they're ending up now.
Yes.
or retiring. I think a lot of the times when you're talking about that particular demographic, you're looking at lifestyle trends in terms of where they want to go and what attracts them to be in a place, and places where they can live, places that they want to retire, places where they want their children to visit them. I think one of the things, a common mistake in understanding how young professionals behave is, you look at some of the cities on the bottom of this list, like Miami or Las Vegas or even, San Antonio or Tampa, and these are places that have a huge amount going for them in terms of lifestyle and fun and all these great things that you think about with being young. And at the same time, highly motivated, highly professional young people aren't necessarily going to those places. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the main thing with this demographic is understanding where are the business opportunities, where are the high-end business opportunities, where do those exist, where are the best companies to work for, and that's sort of the pull. You know, South Beach, Miami is a great place to go hang out, but it's not a great place to develop a career as much as, say, you know, Denver, Colorado, which was 11th on our list.
Mm-hmm. So how has the list changed over the last, say, 5 years? I mean, is it pretty consistent in where these companies are located and where the cities are that these young people are congregating?
Well, this is the first year that we've done the list. I expect that the list will change. Obviously, as the years go by, different years of people and graduates, which was one of the components, move around a considerable amount. They go to different trends, where people were 10, people who graduated college 10 years ago, what they were attracted to now, or what they were attracted to when they got out of school might have shifted a little bit in the next coming years. I think another thing too is that the Forbes 400 big companies and best 200 small companies list,
mm-hmm,
is a pretty changing thing. Fortune's list of companies is just sort of the highest revenue companies, and ours takes in a lot more of considerations. And so what happens is that changes on a yearly basis. And, you know, I think it's largely reflected in the migration patterns of how people respond. I think, you know, the best companies, it's like, you know, San Francisco does so well because you have so many tech companies out there. You know, young kids coming out of school, you want the Googles and the Cisco systems to be in your area, and that's what really brings in young professionals.
Is there anything that surprised you particularly on this list, Matt, as you were doing your research?
Well, I think a lot of people would be surprised by Minneapolis. I think a lot of people aren't necessarily aware of Minneapolis because it's in the upper Midwest, and I think a lot of people on the coasts aren't familiar with it. But it, as far as really solid companies and companies that are both very good for advancement for younger people, and also in terms of very strong multinational corporations that are centered in Minneapolis, there's some extremely good business opportunities. And where it did extremely well as well was in terms of how much money that you could get based on the cost of living. And I mean, I wasn't surprised just because I look at these statistics all day long, and I'm kind of a nerd that way. But I think cities like Minneapolis or Austin, cities like Denver, Philadelphia, and Portland, which were right behind it, are all very attractive cities for young professionals, and where a lot of good companies are starting out, a lot of small companies and are growing into larger companies, and are really building up. Charlotte is a good example, too, at 14, which has, I think, the second highest rate of investment bankers behind New York, which is becoming a huge financial capital now, and a lot of the people that are getting those jobs are younger, because it's sort of the spillover from New York.
Well, I guess you're glad you're in New York, since that's at the top of the list.
Yeah.
Matt Woolsey, reporter for Forbes.com in New York City. Thanks so much, Matt. Right. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
And you can continue the conversation, listeners, online and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.